what you want to hear.
Okay, so just to begin, I said we'll give a couple more minutes for people to get here, but we'll start with a couple different Seder ideas in general. One idea that I think is super cool, I saw this year in Rav Rimon's Haggadah, but I think Rav Kook might say something similar to it, is that Yachatz is when we break the middle matzah, right? And we all know that what do? We, you know, it's like the, in the video, like which half is the bigger half, you know? So what do? We take the bigger half and hide away for Afikomen. So Rimon says something so like profound to me. It was unbelievable. He said, at the very moment of breakdown, he calls it like the moment of rupture, when we hit rock bottom, so to speak, when everything in our life is breaking, so the geula and the redemption has already begun. You break it and you say, okay, we're saving this for later. But we recognize at the very moment where we break down, the process of redemption, the redemptive process has already begun. And to me, that's like a super profound idea. And sometimes we feel totally broken. Sometimes we feel so totally disconnected. And no, like, we're getting there. It's going to be okay. And it's a process and it's slow, but we'll get there. Someone pointed out an amazing word in the Torah with the trup. I'm not like a big grammar trup guy. But this was so cool. In Parsha Shemini, with the death of Nadav and Avihu, so when the Kohanim, Aaron, and his other sons who are there to like basically, I don't want to say clean up what's left, let's say. So the lashon the Torah uses is vikirvu, like come close and basically clean it up and take out whatever is remaining there, the clothing, etc. So there's a double trup on the word vikirvu. There's a tlisha, which is like the little lollipop looking thing, and then there's the gershayim. Right, so if you think about those two words, tlisha, which means tolish, means separated and detached, and gershayim, right? Gershin is a lashon of divorce and also separate. And the idea is like Aaron just lost his sons, and his other sons lost their brothers, and it's a moment of such like bilbul adas, and we just feel totally distraught and disconnected and disarray. And you might feel tolish, you might feel disconnected, and you might feel garoshit, disassociated and divorced. But what's Hashem saying? Kirvu. Both of those trups are on the word vikirvu. And it's dafka when we feel so disconnected, that's when we recognize, no, Hashem's there. I think we spoke about this last time, pre-Purim, that the word chit is spelt with an aleph, which doesn't seem to add anything to the word because the aleph is silent. And the idea is that even when we sin, even when we're, you know, we're nichshol, so Hashem's always there. The aleph, the echad, the alufo sha'olam, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, is always there. And he might be quiet, and we might not be able to see him, we have to remember that he's always there. And that's the idea. Yachatz, we're about to start Magid, we're about to start, Sipur Tzitzis Mitzrayim, and the Gullus story. We have to remember that the moment of Gullus, the moment Gullus begins, is the same exact moment the redemptive process of Geula also begins. So I think that's like a super, super cool idea. That's idea number one. Idea number two, that I had, I think it was just this morning, and I was so excited about it. Okay, this one's sweet. I don't know if it's sweet. I got excited, so I'm saying it's sweet. It might not be, but okay. Hear me out. Here we go. So we say in the Haggadah, there's the meeting, the Rabbanim Bnei Brak, right? So Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is there, and there's a well-known Gemara. I mean, it's called Haggadah, Hareini Keben Shivim Shana. So the Gemara says in Brachos, I think it's Daf Chaf Ches, which is easy to remember because it's Koach. Okay, I'm not like a big Bucky in Shas, but sometimes it's like, if it's a Lamed Beis, it's like Lev. Koach, it's easy to remember. Okay, fine. So Chav Ches, we can remember it. Chav Ches, he's going to become the Rosh Masifta. He's going to become the Rosh Shiva. So he goes home to tell his wife that, listen, I got a shteller. I'm going to be a Rav. I'm going to be Rosh Shiva. So what does she say? Look at your beard. There's no white in your beard. No one's going to respect you. You look like a kid, you know? So overnight, there's a miracle that happens, and he looks like he's 70 years old, right? Unbelievable. So that's what we know. That's what we're familiar with, right? But the Rambam in his Perish Mishnayos says something different. The Rambam in the Perish Mishnayos, the end of that parak, in Brachos, says no. He learned Yomam Valaila. And when you learn Yomam Valaila, and you don't sleep enough, and you don't eat as much, you don't exercise enough, so it takes a toll on your body. And the Lashon is, I think it's like Tashash Kocho, that his strength was weakened, and it diminished. And therefore, he began to age at a much younger age. He looked much older, even though he's very, very young. And that's kind of like the Rambam almost lishitaso, because the Rambam doesn't want to explain things ayidei nisim. He doesn't want to say that there were miraculous causes to certain things if you can explain it by ways of nature, right? That's like a big thing in the Rambam. So we have this apparent contradiction, right? One is saying it's a nis, woke up in the morning, and Rambam is saying, no, this is teva. So Rav Moshe Sternbach in his Agada wants to say that really what Hashem did is he made a nis, but he was mislabish, he kind of dressed it in teva. So like we are in this world. So Hashem wanted to make, okay, yeah, it's an ace, but it appeared like this was a normal thing to happen. And that's Rav Moshe Sternbach, and I think that's a nice idea. I think I have a nice idea too. Here we go, ready? I was so excited. There's a Sfas Emes, Shabbos HaGadol, Parshas Tzav. He says as follows. With regards to Eish Tukar Al Mizbeach and the fire, and he wants to talk about how we have to have fire in our lives, we have to be excited about Avodas Hashem and have Hislavos in our Avodas Hashem. So he says like this. When a Kohen brings a carbon, or when someone brings a carbon, and the Kohen is makir of the carbon, so the ish that was in the Mizbeach, or that was in the Beis HaMikdash on the Mizbeach, came from where? So it came from Shemayim, very good, right? It came from upstairs. Hashem sent an ish down. At the same time, though, even though the ish came from Shemayim, there's still a chiv on the Kohen to light the fire. What's pshat? So one of my Rebbeim explained, beautifully, that when it comes to inspiration in life, like very often, we like to look without. We don't like to look within. We like to look for external sources of inspiration in Hesoros and Avodas Hashem. There's a Furbringen, there's a Shir, there's a Tish, there's a whatever it may be, right? Mlava Malka. And we're always running to those types of things. We're always running to get inspired. But says the Sfas Emes that if we're always looking outward for inspiration, there's something chaser in Avodas Hashem. We have to look inward as well. And we have to inspire ourselves. Right? Don't always be thinking, we shouldn't be thinking like, oh, I need to get inspired by someone. No, inspire yourself. We can fire ourselves up also. Right? It's all good. And I think maybe that's pshat in this, maybe a stira, maybe not, in the Gemara in Brachos and the Ram in the Perasha Mishnah. The Gemara says that he woke up the next morning and boom, he was white, he looked like he was 70. And the Ram says, no. He learned Yom HaValayla, and therefore he, you know, lost his strength, and he seemed to age at a younger, you know, point. But I think it's really two sides of the same coin. Meaning, he, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, put in the Amelis, and he was learning, so that he can maybe have the Das of a Rosh Yeshiva, and he can be as learned and as knowledgeable as a Rosh Yeshiva should be. There's still that other factor, the looks, right? Something that you want to say looks are a little bit external also. You need to look like a Rosh Yeshiva to be a Rosh Yeshiva. Okay, there's a lot to say about that. Not for now. But the point is, as far as the color of his beard and hair, so Hashem said, I'll take care of that. You do what you need to do, right? Hashem's not going to make you a Rosh Yeshiva and make you brilliant on your own. You got the Matzah Satamon. We have to actually put in the Amilas. We have to put in the Shalas. We have to learn on our own. But if Hashem sees us doing that, so he's going to meet us the other way. And Hashem made him turn white at an earlier age. I thought maybe that's a way to explain an apparent steer between the Gemara and the Rambam, that no, he's doing his part, and Hashem's doing his part in meeting him halfway. So I thought maybe that's what we can say there. So idea number two. Number one, we had Yachatz. The moment of breakdown is the moment redemption starts. Number two, Harei Ani Keben Shivim Shana. Fine. Number three, we'll say these ones quickly, and then we'll get to the Maharals. The Maharals are awesome. Okay. I heard this from Rabbi Aaron Liebtag in Lincolnwood. He told me this vort this year that is so good. I called my father to tell him, because my father, he should live and be well, especially if he's listening to this year, because every single year, B'liya Ayin Hara, and it should continue, I get a new Haggadah from my father. So a few years ago, he got me the Masifta Haggadah. A couple years ago, he got me the Aruch HaShulchan's Haggadah. I think this year, he got me Rasalavijik's new Haggadah that just came out. So I called him to tell him, I have a word for you from the Aruch HaShulchan's Haggadah. Rabbi Liebtag told me that there's a wild, not wild, but it's fascinating, because if you think about it, let me just get the words here, because I have it in the packet. Where did it go? Like, as a kid, what did you think happened in Bnei Brak? Like, when the five Tanam are hanging out together. Like, was it like, I always, as a kid, I envisioned it as like a sleepover party. You know, when you go up to like the attic or the basement, depending on the house, you know? And you're like sitting in a circle and like swapping stories and like, as a kid, that's what I envisioned it as, you know? As I got older, I'm not sure if I've shaken that completely, to be perfectly honest, you know? But there's something pretty interesting here, and it goes as follows. What's the bracha that we make after Magid? So the Gemara in Kuf Tes Zayin in Pesachim, 116b, has a discussion. Rabbi Tarfon, who was one of the Tanaim there, and he was Rabbi Akiva's Rebbe, says as follows. Rabbi Tarfon Omer, Asher Ga'alnu V'Ga'al Es Avosinu Mimitzrayim V'Lo Haya Chosim. Meaning, the bracha is Asher Ga'alnu V'Ga'al Es Avosinu. He redeemed us and he redeemed our fathers, Mimitzrayim V'Lo Haya Chosim. There was no end to that bracha. Rabbi Akiva right there on the spot is Cholik on his Rebbe. And he says, no. Rabbi Akiva Omer, Kain Hashem Elokeinu V'Lokei Avosinu Yagi'enu L'Mo'adimu L'Regala Machirim Haba'im L'Krasinu L'Shalom Smeichem Bevinyan Yirecha V'Sasim Be'Avodasecha V'Nochal Sham V'Napsachu Min Anazvachim. No. It's not just it was Ga'al Nebegal Asusinu Mimitzrayim, but Hashem's going to take us out to future Mo'adim and we're going to go B'Shalom V'Simcha Bevinyan Yirecha to Yerushalayim Yerekodesh V'Avodasecha with the Avod and the Beis Hamikdash V'Nochal Sham, we're going to eat Karbonos there all the way up until Barachat Hashem Ga'al Yisrael. So why is he Cholik on his Rebbe? So now, every single 9 days for the rest of your lives, we'll have something to add to the person making a scene. Why? Because everybody likes to say at the end of Makos, when the Tanaim are crying and Rabbi Akiva's laughing and there's a fox, and he says, no, don't worry. He's mechazik them because he's, you know, we always say Rabbi Akiva's the eternal optimist. Right? And he was the one who gave chizik to them. They said, no, if one half of it was true, the other half of it was true, and Yerushalayim and the Beis Hamikdash will be rebuilt and it's all going to be okay. Right? Where did they go for Seder night? The four other Tanaim went to Rabbi Akiva, even though Rabbi Akiva was the youngest of all the Tanaim there. The youngest one, they all went to him. Why did they go? So says the Aruch HaShulchan in his Haggadah Leil Shimurim, he says because they were all broken. And they were all totally, totally distraught over the Churban Beis HaMikdash. And they thought, what are we going to do? What's going to happen? And they're crying. L'chein bachu me'rov tzar. They're crying to all this pain and the suffering. So what did they do? They all went to Rabbi Akiva. Because they knew Rabbi Akiva, if there's going to be one person who's going to give us a nechama, and who's going to give us chizuk, and ensure that it's going to be okay, and we're going to get back to it, it's going to be Rabbi Akiva. So they all ran to him as the eternal optimist. Rabbi Akiva was able to be mechazik all the other tenem, which I think is a super cool idea. So that came from the Haggadah of the Aruch HaShulchan. Fine. Two more points, and then we'll do the maraz. I hope that's okay with everybody. Okay. I tell my students this all the time, because I think it's super important for high school teenagers to understand, but it's, I don't like when people say that, even though I just said it. It's true for every person. If you're a human being, if you're a Jew, especially, you gotta know this idea. What's the most frequent and yet unsatisfying answer to questions at the Seder night? The most common answer to any question, it could be about anything, that we do on Seder night. Why do we wear kito? We give out nuts. We do this. We do that. We dip. We lean. All these things. Why do we do these things?
Because that's what our ancestors did.
Okay. That would also be...
curiosity?
Oh, okay. I was thinking that one. Meaning what? So, of who?
Kids.
Okay. So, imagine this, right? You go to college. You're in this big classroom. A couple hundred students, right? And this professor, who this guy who has tons of credentials, and he's like some spitz, I don't know, whatever. Maybe you're in law school already, and he's... he wrote the book on, you know, torts, whatever it was. And he gets up in the front of the class, first day of semester, gets on the desk, and does the hokey pokey. He does the dance. And then, so one kid raises his hand and says, "Professor, why'd you just do that dance? So that you'd ask me why I did the dance." Does that make any sense to you? We do karpas, we wear a kittel, we do a million different things. So your kid asks you, or someone asks at the Seder, right? Maybe your sibling asks the parent, why do we do that? Oh, so the kid should ask. What? Does that make sense to anybody here? Like, I never got that.
Well, one thing that makes a little bit of sense is the students will never forget that their teacher got up on the desk.
Good. Okay, I hear that. So you're saying, like, Moshe, it remains Lidoros. Everybody remembers that. It's like, it's ingrained. Shalom. Shalom. We barely started. You're great. L'chaim. Welcome.
Are you recording?
We're recording. So you can't curse. I'm kidding. I'm just messing around. Okay. So.
Sorry,
all right. What's the question? Ready? What's the most frequent? We'll test you. Everybody knows the answer. Everybody. What's the most frequent answer to questions on Seder night?
The questions. And it's all about the questions. It's
okay, good. So that what?
The children will ask.
Oh. Good. Amazing. You're right. So now, does that make any sense, though? Meaning, again, the mashal we just gave. If a professor gets up on the first day of class, does a dance on the desk, And a kid raises his hand and says, "Professor, why'd you just do that dance? And he says, "So that you'd ask me why I did the dance." Everybody say, "You're crazy." It doesn't make any sense. So I was thinking like this. Rav Wolfson tells a maisa in one of his svarim, Emunas Yitech, and he says like this. He says that, I think it was the Chassam Sofer.
You're a Rebbe. All you want is that your children, that your students are involved, or they ask, they're not just giving it to them, not in one way, but it's a relationship.
Right. Good. So I want to take it one step further, though. So Rav Wolfson says like this, quotes from the Chassam Sofer, who said, I think it was his son who came to him once with a question in learning. And he said, "Abba Tati, you know, here's the question, what do you think?" And he says, I don't know. He calls him back 3 days later to his office and says, "By the way, the answer is X, Y, and Z. I don't know, Tosos and Erevin, whatever the answer was." And the son's about to walk out, and he says, "Wait, 1 second." And he says, "Yeah." He says, "I just want to let you know I knew the answer right away. But I wanted you to be able to live with the question." Meaning on Seder night, where, you know, we talk about giving over the Mesorah and passing it off to the next generation. So there's so many big questions. We spoke about this last time, right? Everyone has so many philosophical questions, questions of Jewish philosophy. It's just like there's so much about Judaism. And a person can ask a question, not get an answer, and think like, "Oh, there's no answer to my question." Or, "Oh, nobody has a good answer, so then I'm out. This is dumb. Oh, the rabbis, my parents, whatever, they don't have answers to what I'm asking. Forget this. This whole thing's a joke." Right? When Avram started looking into, like, God or who runs the world, so it's a machlok is how old he was, but I think according, I think it was the Ravid, who says he started asking, I could be wrong, I think I heard this from Rabbi Robinson's brother, I think he was 3, according to the Ravid, he was 3.
Right.
When did he find Hashem, though? When he was 40.
Right.
Can you imagine living life like that? And it wasn't just like a silly question he had. This is like a burning question that was going to decide like his life, basically.
Right.
And he said, it's not like he gave up and sat under a rock and drank beer the rest of his life. Or for those 37 years.
Like us, we start when we're 3 years old, we say, "When am I going to make money?" And then when we're 40 years old, finally we make money. So it's the same thing, searching for God.
There you go. It's all about what's the question or what the...
It takes time.
Yeah. So that's the idea, though. Meaning, I told this to my students all the time. Listen, we can talk Machshava. Sometimes we do Machshava Fridays. Sometimes it turns into Machshava Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, whatever, depending on the week. But I said, like, we can question, but you have to understand, like, I'm not the smartest person in the world, right? Like, I don't have all the answers. So sometimes I'll give an answer that, okay, maybe this is what I thought about. I don't know if this is the best answer in the world, but you should go and ask more people. I tell them all the time, like, you should have a note on your phone of just questions. That if you meet people who are bigger than you, people who are, you know, very knowledgeable, have been around for a much longer time, like, ask them questions. Whatever it may be, how could we wipe out a Malek? How is it fair to a Mamzer? Whatever question a kid might have, right? But we have to be able to be okay with living with questions. And not just living with questions, but continuing to grow in Yiddishkeit despite having a question or two on the side. And I think that's something that we're trying to give over to our children on Seder night. Like, you should ask and ask and ask, even if the answers are totally unsatisfying. To the extent that, "Oh, I did that just so you'd ask me a question." Like, no, that doesn't make sense. No, it does make sense. The point is we're trying to ingrain in them the importance of asking questions and not stopping, even if the answers aren't satisfactory. I think that's something that I thought a few years ago, but it was like, it's such a strange answer, just so that they would ask. No, we want to teach kids how to ask questions and the importance of asking questions. So that's idea number 4.
I think it's so beautiful also because that Pesach night is one of those nights that are not just for that night, but rather it's for the whole year round.
Mm.
That the hamshacha, the energy that we bring over Pesach night is supposed to be really for the whole year
round. That's why the Vision Rebbe like to say, I saw this in the Haggadah, Otz Rosayim Shel Tzadikim. It's a big likud of like lots of different rebbes. But he said his favorite phrase of modern Hebrew is Hakol B'Seder. He says everything everything the rest of the year, all your malas in Ruchnias for the rest of the year, Hakol B'Seder, all comes from Seder night.
Seder.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm saying, is that like, what you instill in your children is that the power of asking is not just one night a year.
Right.
It's all year long the children should be asking you.
Yeah.
Abba, why are we doing this? Abba, why are you doing that? Abba, are you doing this? And that's what the Rambam doesn't quote it as one of the... Right, the Rambam does include the daily saying of Shema as one of Zechus Yisrael is not one of the Ases. Only Sipur does he call it Ase. Because Zecher all year round is Zecher that which you spoke about when you did Sipur Yisrael. So that's what you're saying. It's like such a deep thing. You're saying like you want the children to ask. And not just one night a year. You want them to ask all year round. But right. Namshakli, you give over that year is really for them to ask all year round. Abba, Ima, what are you doing here? What does this mean? It's a whole year question. It's a deep thing. It's a great Torah.
Okay, last one, and then we'll do these two morals. Okay. This one I heard from Rav Shai Schechter. Rav Hirsch Schechter's son, he's a Rav in Woodmere. So this is a son Pesach. Excuse me, it's on Purim. I keep doing that, but it's connected. He said a word on the what's it called? The Megillah. Okay? Maybe I told you this one already? I don't know. You'll bear with me. It says like this. Zeresh was Eshes Haman, right? And she was kind of like behind him the whole entire time, encouraging him, supporting him, pushing him, even giving him ideas, right? And B'nai Bias, everyone else in Haman's house, is always supporting him. But there's a shift in the middle of Haggadah, right? After Achashverosh wakes up in the middle of the night, Haman's there. What do you want to do? What should I do to someone I want to honor? Oh, he should be paraded around. So what happens? We all know Mordechai is paraded around the community, right? The city, by Haman, right? And when they're coming around, so Zeresh, what does she do? The Midrash says she takes a bucket of Zevil and everything else going on in there and dumps it, and it lands on Haman's head. Then he comes inside smelling like chreft. And what happens? So she says like this. It's crazy because it's such a change. Right. She says, oh, im mizera hayehudim, if Mordechai is from the descendants of the Jewish people, so then you got no shot. What? Like, how does that work? All of a sudden you just stopped on a dime and said, forget it, you're out? And you're going to die? And you have no chance against the Jews? Like, how? What's going on? So Rav Meir Shapira, one of the visionaries of Daf Yomi, so he actually pointed out further. Because there's a Gemara, I think, that's well known. And it's a little bit perplexing. It says, when Haman was running around trying to find Mordechai to potentially kill him, so was Mordechai hiding? No, he was sitting and learning with children. Oh. He was teaching them Hilchos Kemitza. I think it's Gemara Tesvav in Maseches Megillah. He's teaching him Hilchos Kemitza and different in Yonei Kodshim. So like, what's the significance of that?
Why did go Bedavka in the detail of what they were learning?
Well, yes, and but more specifically, why was he learning? Like, what's the significance of him learning with the kids?
Oh, okay.
And but also in Yonei Kodshim. So Rav Meir Shapiro explained like this. It's all packed into the word Mizera HaYehudim. Because she could have just said, Imei HaYehudim, if he's a Jew, then you have no chance. What's it, Mizera HaYehudim? So Rav Meir Shapiro explains as follows. He says, as long as Klal Yisrael, as long as the Jews are focused on perpetuating Klal Yisrael, as long as they're focused on passing on the Mesorah and passing on the Torah to the next generation, no matter what we try to do to destroy them, we're never going to be successful. As long as we're thinking about how to help and how to protect and how to strengthen the next door, no matter what any of our enemies try to do to us, we're going to be okay. That's what it means in Mizera HaYehudim. We notice that Mordechai, in the face of death, what's he doing? He's learning Hilchos Kodshim with a bunch of kids. Number one, he's teaching kids. And number two, what's he learning with them? Kodshim and Yoni Beis HaMikdash. Because he's saying it's going to be okay. And we're going to get back to the Beis HaMikdash. And everything's going to resume like it used to. Whether I'm around or not doesn't matter. Because you guys are the next generation. You guys are going to be the ones to carry it on. And he says it makes sense that Moshe, we know there's a lot of connection between Moshe and Mordechai. I think, who spoke with this? Maybe Yaakov Klein last week? No, he spoke about Moshe Mashiach. Forget it. But there's a big connection between Mordechai and Moshe. And he says like this, on the way out of Mitzrayim, Kriyas Yamsuf happens, right? After the Makos, after Kriyas Yamsuf. Now what happens? Moshe Rabbeinu is addressing Klal Yisrael for the first time. What is he possibly going to say? He's going to give him Chizuk and Amuna, he's going to give him a Musar Shmuz, it's his manifesto. What's he going to say? Very simply, Ki Imishacha Bincha Machar Lemor. At the foot, right? Right after Yamsuf, Tzias Mitzrayim, what does he say? Your children are going to ask you tomorrow. It's Ki'im, it's not if, but it's when. Because our children are going to ask us questions. What are we doing? Why do we do that? Why do we do this? Why don't we do this? It's not fair. How come? This, that, the other thing. We have to be prepared to answer those questions to our children. Rav Aaron Lichtenstein writes in a small little quintus that this is an imperative upon parents to anticipate what our children are going to ask us. Because kids ask us all these questions all the time. A kid came to my house 2 weeks ago on a Monday night. We were sitting in Shmuzing. He was talking to me about if a person's a good Jew, and you know he davens and he gives tzedakah and you know he does this, that, the other thing. So like, okay, what's the big deal if he's on his phone on Shabbos? What? That was the kid. Well, okay, Bashir Hashem, that's what he's asking me. You have to think I'd answer that question, right? But And then he left, and I started thinking, and my mind started racing, like, okay, I could respond to him like this. I told him I had to think about it. I said, it's a good question, I don't know, I have to think about it. So I thought, okay, I can answer like this, but then he's for sure going to ask me that. Mm. You know? I'm not saying I'm like the greatest mechanic, I promise you that, but once I thought this idea from Aaron Lichtenstein, I started thinking about it more, like, you have to think about when you know.
The greatest mechanic says, it's a good question, let me think about it.
That's thanks, man. There you go. Arya is always there to give me physics. Go ahead. Go ahead.
That's the greatest mechanic
answer. Thank you, thank you.
It
there
is.
You go.
It really is.
Okay.
So you're still the greatest mechanic.
That's the greatest mechanic answer.
So I think that's the idea here, though, right? To be able to anticipate. And I think this is what Mordechai was doing, and this is what Moshe Rabbeinu was doing. We have to be thinking about the next generation. Our children are our most important assets, right? They are what's going to perpetuate not just ourselves and our family legacies, but our nation's legacy, Klal Yisrael. I have to think about how we're going to educate them. So those are the five ideas. We'll quickly chazer them. Number one was Yachatz, that the moment of breakdown is also the beginning of the Geula. Okay, we had the Harayani Keben Shivim Shana, and recognizing that it's doing our Hishtadlus, the Isarusa de la Tata, combined with Hashem meeting us halfway, the Isarusa de la Ela. We talked about the Archa Shochan and Rabbi Kiva's optimism. We talked about the Chashivas of questioning, and we spoke about the importance of Chinuch. Before I stay to my Raz, what time is it? I don't know how long people want to stay, but Moshe said you stay late. So. You guys want to hear an amazing story?
Yeah, I
want to
hear
like, unbelievable.
I have a question on your second point, though. Because I learned to see the Shema, it says that Leil Pesach is the only Chag, that Shabbos is Yisroel Shel Eila.
Yeah.
Oh, Chagim are Yisroel Shel Tata, because we are Mechadish Zman.
Yeah.
But Leil Pesach is the only Chag that is Yisroel Shel Eila.
Uh-huh. So you're saying, how did I just say Yisroel Shel Tata?
Right.
You have to listen to the recording. I'll send it to you. Okay, fine.
I'm late, you miss out.
There you go. Okay, fine.
No, but I was like, I don't know the answer.
So I'll tell you, this is like one of my favorite Maisalach ever. So like I have to be careful, like, because I feel like I say it all the time, but it's so good. It's a big El Tshuva type of story. But basically, Abraham J. Twersky, Rav Michal's brother in the family, he's known as Rav Shia, apparently. That's what someone told me. I'm not in the family, so I call him Rabbi Dr. Abraham J. So he says that everybody should try to go to an AA meeting once in their life. Now, I don't know how that works. I haven't been to one. You've been to one? So I don't know how one has to check in. I don't think they card you when you get in there. Like, are you a card-carrying AA, whatever. But he says either way, it's important to go once in your life. He says you learn so much from people. So he told the craziest and most amazing story. There was a woman who was a hardcore alcoholic, drank Yom HaValayla. And not only that, but she was a rabid New York Jets fan. Okay?
That's what she drank.
That's probably, right? I was too young to drink, but I was always frustrated because they never really won. But either way, so she was a huge Jets fan. And she said that one time, she was telling us over in a AA meeting, because people were saying, how did you get to where you are? How did you overcome it? Whatever. So she said, I had a friend's destination wedding, and it was over a weekend, and I was coming back like Tuesday morning, whatever it was. And the Jets were playing the Miami Dolphins on Sunday Night Football. Huge game, Dan Marino. It was at the Meadowlands in New York, or I guess that's technically New Jersey, whatever. And I was going to miss it. So what did she do? She arranged for a friend to tape the game, okay? And she made sure no one told her the score. It was a little bit easier probably back then, right? But still, she made sure no one was going to tell her the story. She wouldn't see it online. She had nothing, right? And when she walked through the airport, she wasn't looking at any of the newsstands, right? She didn't want to see it. She goes to her friend to pick up the VHS, and her friend hands it to her and says, oh, here's the tape. By the way, the Jets won. Can't believe it. Really? Like, after all that, she got through the whole weekend, made it back to her house, and her friend says the Jets won. She's like, she watched the game? Of course, if you're a Jets fan, you're going to watch the game, right? True story. And my friend Yitzi Sprung, the assistant rabbi at Or Torah, he's from Florida. He actually was in New York that weekend. They went to the game, and he's a Dolphins fan. He told me he was at the game. Why is that important? You'll see. At halftime, the Dolphins are winning 28-3. The place emptied out. Okay, so Rabbi Sprung told me that he and his family moved like all the way down. They were at like the 50-yard line, first or second row, because no Jets fans stayed. It's terrible. And she said to the people in the group at that meeting, she said, if it was a normal weekend, I would have been drinking even more. I've been throwing all my empty bottles and cans at the TV. She said, I would have been going crazy. She said, but I sat on the couch and just watched with like tremendous curiosity, because my friend told me they won. So she just sat back and was just watching it unfold. And she said the Jets ended up winning 34-31. And she said, at that point, it finally hit me. Because in the little book, they talk about giving yourself over to a higher being or a higher power. And she said, I finally understood what that meant. That not everything is in my control. And just because things look bad and because I'm frustrated doesn't mean it's coming to an end. And she said, this was the biggest muster for her. She said, I knew the Jets were going to win. And I think that might be pshat in this idea that we quoted from Rav Rimon by Yachatz. That at the moment of breakdown, the moment of rupture, the second we crack the matzah, as we're about to go into the Gullah story, we're already putting it away for the Afikoman, for the Geula, for the Karban Pesach. We're saying it's going to be okay at the end. And we're going to get through it. I don't know how. We're not exactly what avenue and what way we're going to get there. But we know we're going to make it out. I thought that was also a powerful story. Okay, fine.
Yeah, I'm trying to give it myself.
Yeah.
I must have given it myself. He said like the whole story of like one of these like people in the town of like the town of Shamtov, like in his Porus, they invited him to become a Pesach Seder, and he went and he started off and like, he had a glass of wine. He's like, oh, this is my type of Seder, right? And then for hours they spoke and he had a little bit of vegetable and salt water, and then he had, like, after hours of peeking, they gave him like a white vegetable, and he started, like, it was very disgusting. I can't do that, and he left.
Mm-hmm.
And like, the Jews saw him later on in the night, and the Jews were like, you're dumb. If you stayed 5 more minutes, you would have had the best meal of your life. You leave whenever it gets hard, you'll never get to the Shulchan Aruch. And that's the message, is that if you stop by all the marah in your life, you'll never get to the Shulchan Aruch. You'll never get to the delicious meal.
Shkayach. Yeah, MS.
And without all the marah, you'll also never get there.
That's b'diuk.
You never appreciate it also.
You never appreciate it. Exactly what you're saying.
Yeah.
Part of life.
I saw, I'll just, be mostly on that. That's why, I mean, I think there's this fast sentence that talks about korech is when we put the marah and the matzah together to recognize that it's all part of one process. But I saw a really cool idea because something I never chapped, I think, until this year was the Seder, the Simanim are out of order. We do motzi matzah, then marah, then korech. But it should really be more than motzi matzah, because the matzah represents, you know, us leaving Mitzrayim, where more is the shibud. So Rav Ari Marcus, I think this is his own idea. Rav Ari Marcus is the Rosh Shiva in Reishit Yerushalayim. He said the following. He said that in order to experience the more and to be able to make it through, you need to have a little bit of matzah at the beginning. Meaning that if we only start learning about Amuna and Ashkacha Pratis and Akadosh Baruch Hu after something bad has happened to us and we're already behind the eight ball, so then it's going to be very difficult. We need to always be learning about Amunah, always be learning about Hashgachas Hashem and, you know, how Hashem runs the world, so that when we get into these difficult situations, we'll be able to better navigate those obstacles that we encounter, which I think is also a powerful idea. Okay, fine. Let's do two marals. We can do one however late people want to stay, but these are two of my favorite ones I've seen this year. I started learning a lot of Maral the past, I would say, year or two. Rav Moshe Weinberger told me that I should be spending a lot of time in Maral if I'm teaching in Ida Crown, or teaching high school.
Maral is like the deepest.
So this is what I did, though. I maybe I told you this. I asked...
Tanya is written based on the Maral, right?
I think he says it in Zag Dhamma, right?
Yeah,
Dhamma is two Svarim. One is in Maral, the other one is...
Rav Cook also, a lot of them, you know, Sifrei Machshava are Mavosis on the Maral. I think that's maybe why he told me to do it. But, so I asked Rav Hartman, because Rav Hartman is the one who wrote the footnotes to these blue Marals. I said, where should I start? Should I start at Netzach or Tiferes? And he told me, everyone's got it wrong. So you got to learn the Gor Aryeh. So I said, okay, just go through a Keseder. He said, no, he sent me a Mafteach with the Iker Gor Aryeh. So I came across a fascinating Gor Aryeh. And let's check it out. Bnei Yisrael leaves Mitzrayim. Okay, we get to Yam Suf, and we're like, oh, shoot. Right? We get the Yam in front of us, Mitzrayim behind us. So what do? We daven. Right? Exactly. We cry out to Hashem. The Pasuk says in Perek, this Parshas B'Shalach, Perek Yud Dalad, Pasuk Yud, 14:10. Uparo Hikriv, V'yisu Bnei Yisrael Zeneyem, we looked up, V'hine Mitzrayim Noseya Achareim, V'yiru Ma'od, we were very scared, V'yitzaku Bnei Yisrael Hashem. We cried out to Hashem, Zot Rashi, V'yitzaku, tafsu umnus avosam. What does that mean? We grab the weaponry, so to speak, of our fathers. Okay? And he quotes, Avram Davin, Yitzchak Davin, Yaakov Davin. We grabbed on to what they did. So now the Maral says something very interesting. De'in lomar, you shouldn't say, Shehayu tzoakim kederach ha-tzadikim, shehim tzoakim. Don't say that they were davening like big tzadikim, like people who are super frum. Be'is tzara, no, that's not what they were doing. Because it says, "D'ha'i ha'yu mislonu n'machshav lomar, halo tov lanu." And a second later, we're going to be complaining, well, we'd rather be in Mitzrayim. We weren't tzaddikim, says the Maharal. Ela shehu umnos avosam, shekach ha'yu minog avosam. He says it was simply, minog avosam nimshach adam tamer acharav. We were doing what our parents did. It was minog avosinu biyadenu. And that's why we davened. Right? So to put this in historical context, I think is very important. Because who are the avos that we're quoting? It wasn't like their parents. It wasn't Ima and Abba and Babi and Zaidi. It was Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. How long were we in Galus Mitzrayim for? How long since Avram? It's been at least like 400 or 500 years, let's say, since Avram Avinu, right? Which means Klal Yisrael has been passing on the Mesorah of Tefillah, Be'is Tzara. When something goes wrong, what do? You daven to Kodesh Baruch Hu. How do we know that? We're stuck in Mitzrayim. We're Shakua with Ovdei Avodah Zarah. Like, we're totally up a creek. But we know that what? No matter what? What do we have? We have Tefillah, and we learned that from our Avos. Again, not our parents and grandparents, but Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. And the Imahos. That's a crazy, crazy thing. They think the importance of passing on a Mesorah. Right? My friend told me that his niece, I think, had a birthday party in school. They brought out a little birthday cake, and they put candles on the birthday cake. So what did she do before? They said, make a wish and blow it out. So what did she do? She covered her eyes. Why? Because that's what she sees her mother do Friday night. It's all she knows. There's something sweet and tamim about this minog. Right? And it's like a crazy, crazy thing. And I was thinking about this. We talked about minhagim and the importance of minhagim. I saw in Shari Chinuch, it's a sefer of different ideas from the Babbage Rebbe on Chinuch. And he says in there, Leil Seder is an awesome question. Right? If I put a bunch of mitzvahs on the table, some derabanan, some deraisa, some minhagim, what should come first? Probably deraisa, then derabanan, then minhagim. That seems to make sense. So, but how do we start the Seder? So, okay, Kiddush is Kiddush, but we do that for every Shabbos and every Yom Tov, so let's say that one doesn't count. Right? What should, in theory, come next? Either the rest of the Dalet Kosos, or maybe Matzah, right? Maybe Marah Korich is Zerabonis, but what do we do? Orchatz and?
Karpas.
Right? Like, and Yachatz, like, what's going on? These are like funk, I don't even know if you'd call them Mitzvot Zerabonon. He says they're Minhagim. So why would we do that? He says something so sweet. He says, on the night of giving over the Mesorah, on the night of passing on Yiddishkeit to the next generation, she says it's not just about what we have to do and we're not allowed to do. It's not about the Chiyuvim and the Isurim and the black and white checks and minuses. He says it's about what a Jewish home looks like. It's about what a Jewish person is all about. It's about the color, right? And how to fill it in. It's about, imagine having a challen with just, you know, meat and potatoes. And you forget all the spices. It's lacking something. Right? You would say that maybe the meat and potatoes are the most important thing. It could be that the rice and the abundance are the most important. But without the minhagim, they're missing such a key component to Jewish life. And that's why on the night we give it over, we're telling them it's not just about what you have to do and what you're not allowed to do. But it's about what it means to be a Jew. And that's what we're trying to give over. And I think that's why we say Maisa Avo Simin Labonim in like a in a conceptual manner about the Avos and the Shvatim, and we learn Sefer Bereishis, right? We're supposed to take Musar from that, but I think, on just on a Pashut level, Maisa Avos, Simim Labanim. What parents do is a sign for their children. And the children will be Moshech after that. The kids are going to follow what their parents do, right? I'm sure you've heard me say this word before, from the Munkach Rebbe, who says, Hanistaros Hashem Elokeinu, V'haneglos Lanu Levaninu Adolam. So he darshins the Pasuk, Hanistaros Hashem Elokeinu. When we do Maisim Tovim, when we do Mitzos, privately, with no one else around us or aware of what we're doing, so who knows about that? Hanistaros, Mashem Elokeinu. Vahaniglos, but the things we do in a more revealed manner, we do it a little bit more publicly, not in a gaivadika way, not in an arrogant fashion, but in just in a more public way that we're proud and happy to be doing mitzvos. So then it's lanu, but not just lanu, but ulivaninu ad olam. For our children, ad olam, for generations. When we do things and we're proud about it, so that's an unbelievable thing. And I think that's what Mesorah is. Mesorah is giving it over hand to hand. You're really mamish. You're saying, here, take it and run with it. It's a handoff. And we're giving over to the next generation. And that, I think, is how beautiful this tefillah at Yom Suf was. We were mamish. I don't want to say we weren't from. I don't like talking like that. But like, we weren't avos anymore. We were past the shvatim. We were shekua. In a land that was totally, totally infested with promiscuity and znus and all sorts of bad things. And yet we knew how to daven. because of the minhag of Asin Avidinu. But, I saw a different maral that made me go back and reread it. Because I was reading a maral in Tiferes Yisrael, talking about, you know, the Mishnah that is our alarm clock. Right, which Mishnah is that? Rabbi Chanan ben Kashi Omer Ratzah Kodesh Baruch Lezakos Yisrael. So we all, you know.
I had one quick thing.
Yeah, please.
Because otherwise I'll forget. Is even the things you do privately, I've heard people say, don't keep them private from your kid.
Yeah.
Let them know all of the hidden mitzvahs that you do.
Yeah.
You know,
someone just told me, not just, but a little bit ago, that if you give tzedakah, you're allowed to go tell your kids that you just gave like a fat check to whatever institution. I never heard that before. But the idea of like,
I mean,
impressing upon them the importance of mitzvahs,
my son told me. At the same time and say, this is between you and I.
Right, yeah, absolutely. It's a great hara. Yeah. So Maral says like this, he's commenting, and in a footnote here, in Tiferes Yisrael, talks about someone else who did mitzvahs because of minhag avosei nubiyadeno, let's call it, because of a minhag. Who was someone who did mitzvahs in Sefer Bereishis simply because that's what he was accustomed to? Anybody?
Someone who did mitzvahs.
Not because they thought it was the right thing to do, but that's because this is what they were taught to do. So Lot and the mitzvahs, we've been past. Don't worry. I didn't really expect him to get it. We're way past Bereishis already at this point. I expect. It's all you're right. It's about to get Lot. So he says like this. He says Lot did achnas zorchim.
That was the person I was thinking of.
This is a gavaldic thing. Achnas. It was unbelievable. Maral says no. There wasn't a nakuda tova, if you can believe such a thing. There was not a nakuda tova in his achnas zorchim. He says like this. Let me just find the words inside. El mi bis Avram lamad. He learned it from Avram completely. Vahahergo al kol davar shilton v'derech ergilo halach lahachnas aorchim kamosha asa Avram. Meaning he only did it because that's what he was taught. That's what he knew. It's all he knew. He wasn't doing it because he thought it was a good thing to do because Avram showed me this is a mitzvah. No, this is all like mamish. The only reason he did it because that's what he saw. El shehem him advarim. E'ef shar lo la'adam shi'id stein b'mitzvah achas. It's impossible for a person to excel in this certain mitzvah. If it's totally minog, if it's totally, I'm only doing it because that's what I saw, so then it's a problem. And he says, he points to this idea. He points to this maral in the Gor Aryeh. Let's take a look. Let's read it carefully. He says like this, Tafsu umnas avosam, they grabbed on to the umnas, the weaponry of their parents. The ein lomar, don't say shayut tzoakim kederach hatzadikim shem tzoakim beisora. They weren't davening like tzadikim daven when our backs are up against the wall. Because we complained just a moment later. Elishu umnus avosam shekacha yamina gavosam. We only did it because that's what our parents taught us. V'davar shehu mina gavosam. And something that we learn from our parents and do. Nimshacha adam tamid achar. We just do it because that's what our parents do. Afal gav she'inu osa bekavonas libo v'daito. He says, and he elaborates on this in the footnote here and over here, where he says there was zero kavana whatsoever in their tefillah. Now that's a pretty bold statement. Because like we felt like we were going to die. Right? So it's difficult to say that there was zero kavana. And tzaka, the Medrash says, is one of the highest levels of tefillah. It's just this like raw scream to a Kadosh Baruch Hu. Yet the Maral is still saying that there was no kavana. We were only doing it because that's what our parents did. And this is what I was thinking.
If there was no kavana, it seems like they really lost complete belief when they were in Mitzrayim.
You're saying, and therefore, meaning they were only screaming
therefore,
because,
like, no matter how bad things get, like, who are you crying to if you really lost complete belief?
Uh-huh.
That's the only way that it would like make any sense, because otherwise, that is the time when you're gonna have kavanah.
Right, I'm with you 100%.
But that's what we say in Davar. We say, "Ani mami v'mura shalema." Who do you know? Even the greatest tzaddikim that we have on, who has the mura shalema? Who has complete perfect emuna?
He said none.
No one.
So let's see that's this. His lashon at the end.
A Mushlima is the most, the Baal Shem Tov says, Mushlima is the Muna Peshuta. Is that, I don't know anything, but I know that I got to scream out to my father, you know? Like at the end of the day, like, only my Alva can help me on this one. That's the Muna Shlima.
So maybe the Maral hedges though, because what you're saying, Ari, because at the end, before he just said, She'eno osa bekavanas libo v'daito, but at the end, Haresha adam osa davar misham minhag, af agav she'eno osa zeb bechol libo. So maybe there is a little bit of kavana, but it's just not with b'chol lev. Okay, so maybe that's what he's picking up on, what you're kind of hinting to there. But I was thinking like this, and maybe these, there are two sides to the Masorah, right? When it comes to Minhag Avosim Yadeinu, as parents, we have to impress upon our children the importance of the Jewish tradition, the Jewish Masorah, and what we want our children to be mamshich with, what we want them to perpetuate, what we want them to carry on. However, if kids are only doing it, or if we are only doing it because our parents wanted us to do it, right? Our children are only going to do things because we want them to do it. There's something seriously lacking in their Avodas Hashem. Right? Their Avodas Hashem needs to be personal. They can't just do things because the parents are doing it. Right? When you think about tshuva, Rav Soloveitchik says this, and I think it's quoted in Nefesh Ra'ah, maybe in Al Tshuva also, that you know like the end of Slichos, the parts where we're more familiar with, like the Anenus and things of Mishana, right? There's also like Micha and Ezra, and it talks about the tshuva of different people throughout Tanakh. So he says, why do we need different ways of doing tshuva? He says, because every single person is different. Our Yetzirahs are different. Our Chatam, our Nechshalim are different. Memela, every single person has a different avenue and a different avodah when it comes to tshuva. Right? There can only be certain set, quote, rules of tshuva. Yeah, you need Charata and you need Vidoy. But at the end of the day, like, every single person has to figure out for themselves. You can't give Klalim in a very, you know, general way when it comes to tshuva. Because every single person is different. And if it's true with tshuva, I think it's true with general avodas Hashem. Right? What do we say in Shemona Esrei? Elokeinu ve'elokei avoseinu. If you're only davening to Hashem because he's elokei avoseinu, so then there's something chaser in your connection with the Kaddish Baruch Hu. It needs to be elokeinu ve'elokei avoseinu. Yes, Hashem, you're my God because my parents are Jewish and thereby I'm Jewish. But if the only reason you're my God is because my parents are Jewish, then there's something lacking. We have to develop our own unique relationship with the Kodesh Baruch Hu. And that's why we say, right, Elokei Avram, Elokei Yitzchak, and not just Elokei Avram Yitzchak V'Yaakov. Right? It's a different, so to speak, God for each one. Elokei Avram, the way Avram connected to Hashem was different than the way Yitzchak connected. It's Elokei Avraham, Elokei Yitzchak, Elokei Yaakov, because they all had a different way or means in connecting with the Kodesh Baruch Hu. And I need to read this piece here, because this is super profound. I was learning with a kid in Skokie, not the yeshiva, in the
is that the Lord?
In the town. This is the Lord, Rabbi Jonathan Sachs. And he has this piece here in his Haggadah. He has essays on one half and then ideas on Haggadah in the other half, where he talks about the difference between history and memory. He says, history is Milashon, his story. Okay? When you're in school, when you're younger, and you're just reading a history textbook, it doesn't mean anything to you in a personal way. Like, you don't really care what the Aztec, you know, Chevra used to do and what their culture was like. Okay, you study it for a test, right? You read about the Industrial Revolution because, like, you need to do well in school, but, like, do you really, like, internalize the messages from the... Like, no, you don't really care, right? But memory is Milashon, my story. And he says, the Hebrew language has no word for history. History in Hebrew is historia. But the word for memory in the Torah is what?
Zecher.
Zecher. And he says here that it comes up how many times in the Torah? I don't want to take too much time here.
Zecher.
Oh man, I can't find it right now.
Probably 26 times.
Way more than 26. You're a clown.
Times 18.
At least.
101 times.
Can't find it. It's a big number, I promise you guys. Okay, fine.
Over 100?
Yeah.
613.
No, that'd be very cool, though. And very firm. I feel like such a doofus. I should have marked it off. Okay, fine. Either way. Okay, the Hebrew verb, zachor, signifies more than just a consciousness of the past. Right? We remember for the sake of the future and for life. It's my story. Without memory, there can be no identity. We recall things. So he says something that is so critical, and I think this is what we're driving at in the Maharal here. And the kid said something that was wild to me. Like, he had this amazing hakara when we read this. To be a Jew is to know that over and above history is the task of memory. As Jacob Neusner eloquently wrote, civilization hangs suspended from generation to generation by the gossamer strand of memory. I don't know what that word means. If only one cohort of mothers and fathers fails to convey to its children what it has learned from its parents, then the great chain of learning and wisdom snaps. I'll read that one more time, because it's an unreal line. If only one cohort of mothers and fathers fails to convey it to its children what it has learned from its parents, then the great chain of learning and wisdom snaps. If the guardians of human knowledge stumble only one time, in their fall collapses the whole edifice of knowledge and understanding. More than any other faith, Judaism made this a matter of religious obligation. Right? We have a chiyuv to remember. Pesach is where the past does not die but lives, in the chapter we write in our own lives, in the story we tell our children.
So,
when we read this line, the kid said to me, and it was so cool to see him have this recognition, he said, "Whoa, it's terrible when someone isn't religious anymore." He says, "It's crazy to go off the derech." I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "When someone makes that decision, they're effectively breaking the chain or stopping it." And he was like blown away from that. So I think, again, to just chazer this maral for a second, I think the way to perhaps understand it is that there are two sides. When it comes to minhag avasinu v'yadeinu, right? Minhagim are so important. We dive in the Yamsuf, not because we were firm, not because we were so connected, because we knew this is what we do. At a time of trouble, be'ez tzara, we know for hundreds of years going back to the Avos, Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, that we dive in be'ez tzara. And that's an unbelievable thing, the power and the beauty of Misora. But, says Amar on the flip side, that if we're only davening, because that's what we know from our parents, and not because we have a connection with the Kaddosh Baruch Hu, so then there's something chaser in that relationship. And what I think, maybe if we just push it a little bit further, is when it comes to Misora, that as much as the children need us, right, to give them the Misora, we need the children. Right? And I think that's something, I know my father might be listening, but as a kid, I don't know if I heard that so much. And for sure, a lot of my students, when I told them this idea, they're like, "Yeah, no way, we've never heard that." Right? As kids, like, think about it. And like Moser Shmuzes you heard in yeshiva, or like you heard drashos in shul, whatever it may be, like, it was all like, we need to be the ones to carry on the Mesorah. And we have an achrayus, right? And that can feel very heavy. But I think if you put it in another way, like, Klal Yisrael needs you, this Ikvasa de Mashicha, this last generation. Because we've been building and building and building. And we need you. If not for you, we're going to be forgotten. And I don't know if kids like hear that ever. If a kid, like a 14, 16-year-old girl or boy says, like, Klal Yisrael needs you. And you mean so much to Klal Yisrael. And maybe you're just as important as Moshe Rabbeinu. Maybe you're just as important as Rabbi Akiva. Because you're going to be the one. If not you, everything can just stop. But we need you to perpetuate the Mesorah. And I think, again, those are the two sides of the coin of Mesorah. Right? We need Minhag Avasinu V'Yadeinu. Right? But at the same time, as much as we need our parents to give us the Mesorah, they need us to perpetuate the Mesorah. And I think that's something super critical on the El Seder. Fine. That's one idea from Maral. We're okay with one more idea? Is everyone okay with that?
I may have to leave, but you, I'll...
Okay, no pressure. We'll say this last one relatively quickly. Bleed out. Okay. We can do this one outside, but we know, B'nai Yisrael, Rashi tells us, and there are lots of different midrashim, Rav Kohn, at his Shabbos, like other Rashi, spoke about this a lot, how there seems to be lots of contradictory midrashim as to the status of B'nai Yisrael and Mitzrayim. Fine. So he says like this. Rashi says that we didn't have any zichuyos. We are bereft of zechuyos. Hashem gave us two mitzvos in Mitzrayim so that we would be redeemed. What were they? Dam Pesach and Dam Milah. Right? Karm Pesach and Bris Milah. Fine. And what do? We put them on our doorpost. Great. We'll get to that in a minute. Why those two mitzvos more so than any other mitzvos? Throw 613 mitzvos into a hat. Pick out two. Bada bing, bada boom. Who cares? Could have been like Makas, Gag, and like, I don't know, Lulav and Esrog. Who cares? Oh, so what's the significance of these two mitzvahs? So it says Maral like this. Maral says, we'll do this outside. Maral says that number one, Bris Milah is a chosim al haguf. It's a sign, it's a signature, it's almost like a dog tag, so to speak, of soldiers, to know who you belong to. Every Eved, for sure in those times, had a certain chosim on them, so that everybody knows who is their master. He said, if we only have this chosim, though, are we Ovdei Hashem? He says, no, because we didn't do anything yet. Lahavdil, it's like free agency. When a player signs on the team, right? In the middle of offseason, is he on the team? So, like, technically speaking, yeah. But, like, nothing happened yet. He didn't do anything for the team, right? He might only get his first paycheck at the beginning of the season. Nothing happened yet. Yeah, he put on the jersey and said some stuff at a press conference, but he didn't do anything. There was no avoda done yet. Says Maral, the Karm Pesach is referred to as the only mitzvah in the Torah called Avoda. This is the avoda. This is the thing that we are doing that symbolizes our commitment to a Kadosh Baruch Hu in a pu'ula type of manner. Right? We got the chosen, we got the bris milah, that's us signing up. That's us signing the contract, so to speak. Right? But the next step is actually putting into play. Where's the practice? What are we doing? This was the first mitzvah. Right? And it's not stam that we were taking dafka, the chefza, the sheep that was the avodah zarah of our oppressors. We said, we don't care what you guys think. We don't care what you guys want to do to us. We believe in a Kadosh Baruch Hu, and we serve a Kadosh Baruch Hu. Whatever he does, whatever he says, we are going to do. And that was the Dan Pesach Dan Mila. Take it one step further. My great friend Jordan Ginsburg told me the following idea. We were talking about this idea, Dan Pesach Dan Mila. He quoted from one of his Rebbeim the following. We know that Hashem has Ava She'ina Tliya B'davar. Hashem has love for us that is unconditional. Okay? But in a crazy, paradoxical way, it is dependent on one thing. Us wanting the love. What did we do with the blood? We took, the Medrash says, we took the Dam Milah and Dam Pesach, we mixed it together, according to one Medrash, and we put it on our doorposts, right? So as a kid from the Rugrats movie, or I don't know, all the other, you know, Passover movies. So where did they put the blood? It was always on the outside of the door, right? The Medrash says we put it on the inside of our door. First of all, why do we need to do anything? Hashem differentiated between us and the Mitzrim, the first 9 Makos, all of a sudden we need to do something? And second of all, like, once we're doing it, why are we doing it on the inside of the doorpost? So says my friend, quoting his Rebbe, that this was for us to show Hashem we're opting in. Hashem is Ava Shein Tuli B'Davar for Klal Yisrael, but we have to show we want to be the recipients of His love. His Rebbe gave a difficult mashal, but he said, imagine if parents love their children no matter what, but sometimes the kids want to leave home. They've had enough, for whatever reason, something happened, that they need to leave. A parent loves their child so much and wants to do whatever they possibly can for their child. But at a certain point, the greatest way to express one's love is by letting the child walk away. Which is a wild idea. But he says the same, Hashem loves Klal Yisrael. No matter where we are, no matter where we're holding, Hashem loves us. How do we experience, how do we feel the Ava Shehinu Tliya B'Davar of HaKadosh Baruch Hu? So we have to opt in. We have to say, Hashem, we want it. We want to receive it. So Jordan pointed out, that's why we're so harsh on the Rasha. Because he says, Mahavoda hazos lechem. Lechem velo lo. He's not, he's dafka opting out. He's saying, I'm not part of you guys. That's why we're so strict on him. And we have to say that we want it. And that's what the Dan Pesach Dan Milah is. It's mysterious nefesh, it's blood, this is serious stuff. We're putting our own life on the line for the Dan Milah. And we're taking an avodah zarah in front of all of our oppressors. We're barbecuing it. The whole Mitzrayim smell like they're God. It's like a crazy thing, right? It's real mysterious nefesh, but we say we're going to run after Hashem, and we want it. Ki chol zahav ani lechtech achra b'mnur. Hashem is in love with us because we chased after Him. We're running after Hashem. That's why we read Shir Shirim at the end, because it is this love song. But again, to experience that love, you got to opt in. You're never going to date the girl if you never ask her out, right? We have to say, Hashem, we want it. We want to receive Your love. And I think that's what Dan Pesach Dan Milah is all about. Shkoyach. Oh, yeah. Yeah.